Hey everyone, welcome into Objectively Good Takes. My name is Dan and I'm here with my friend Hippo. And we are here for the third of our podcast, breaking down week one, and kind of getting our feet wet with the first real action of 2024 regarding football. It was a really exciting week. How'd you feel about week one, Hippo?
That's right. The clouds parted, the sun shone, and we were able to finally see some football. The gods were nice to us. It was a great day of football action, and it was just long waited for. And it's always that first week, by the end of the Sunday, that first day, you're always tired out, but this is what we live for.
Absolutely. And just, I was tweeting this out a little while ago, but just for the record, we hit 5 out of 6 legs on the parlay. We hit 6 out of 7. So that's a good batting average for the first week. And now we got more information, more good calls. So for people to follow us, I am at FF Rich Kid on Twitter. Hippo, you're at?
I'm at Hippo Ball. Is it 94 or is Hippo Ball? No, Hippo. What's my handle?
I think it's Hippo _ Ball. If I'm
not mistaken. That's right. HIPPO _BALL. That's right. Cool. If my lock of the week, Dan, was the Texans -3, and these Texans did not win by 3, they won by 2, makes me a big loser.
Yeah, but you hit all the other ones.
Ripped my heart out. Oh, I was going to come on here and say terrible things about Anthony Richardson, but I'm a mature person. I'm going to applaud Anthony Richardson for being able to throw the ball 60 yards and being one of 3 quarterbacks that can run out of the pocket and put his shoulder down and run people over, along with Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts. So congratulations, Anthony Richardson. You took $2,100 out of my pocket.
Yes. Thank you, AR, for being 9 completions on 18 attempts for the day or something. That was the whole thing. All right. So we're going to do an overview on what our podcast structures are, just a little bit housekeeping, as it were. So we're going to try and do 2 episodes a week. The first episode every week is going to be a breakdown of the previous week, what we want to highlight, maybe players or certain tape that we've watched that we really enjoyed or didn't enjoy, and we want to highlight a little bit further. And then we'll preview the Thursday night game. And then when we release on Saturdays, it'll be more of a, here's the dump for what we're looking at between the Sunday slate and the Monday night game. And that's going to be our structure going forward, just so everyone knows.
That's right. You get a double dip of us for the week every week.
We can provide something entertaining, but also.
So I'm going to hop in here with our 3 highs of the week. I'm going to take the lead here. Did we talk about the Eagles game when we last departed? Or we just talked about the Chiefs game. I think we just talked about the Chiefs. We recorded right before the game went on there. So my first high of the week was Saquon Barkley and the Philadelphia Eagles offense. It's their total firepower. That was a really good game. The field tried to ruin it for us. And Jalen had a few picks early, a pick and a fumble, I want to say. And that really put the Eagles behind the 8-ball, but they still recovered and won that game. I don't want to say comfortably because it came down to the wire, but between A.J. Brown, Saquon, Devontae's is picking up first downs too. The addition of Saquon here is just absolutely scary because it gives them another piece of artillery here. Saquon can rip off runs still. Saquon can do the goal line runs when Jalen needs a little breather. So you have 2 running backs that can probably squat 500 pounds between them, which is the deadliest duo this league's probably seen in a long time. Saquon, that factor of Saquon in that backfield behind that offensive line really gives the Eagles their CMC like the Niners got a few years ago. And I don't see how the ceiling is not one top one offenses in the NFC, the NFL. This Eagle team is going to be really hard to beat, especially if that defensive front is as good as it was on Friday. They just need to shore up some things in the secondary, and hopefully they will bring Bradbury back, getting the rookie more involved. And yeah, the Eagles are going to be a fun offense to watch. Bet the overs on the Eagles' offenses.
I was really impressed with that. And Saquon ripped off a couple runs that were just like pure explosiveness. And I don't know whether it's the scheme fit or just being utilized in proper offense, getting weak Giants. could be a medley of things, but he definitely looked like the star of the show.
Mm-hmm. We really want him to stay healthy. Last year, people, when he got banged up on the Giants, we were like, yeah, they thought he was nearing the end. This is the guy that we thought he was coming out of college. He looked exactly like he did coming out of Penn State there. He looked completely reinvigorated and he's ready to roll. It's a very exciting time to be a Saquon fan.
It absolutely is. So I'll give you my first one, and I'm going to follow the trend with the RBs. And my first high here is Mixon. Joe Mixon is in an offense that it's his style of running. There's so many different skill weapons across the field. CJ Stroud looked commanding within that offense performance. We know that offense wasn't an enigma. It wasn't that one-time small sample size thing. No, we would have had a full offseason, embedded new pieces, and made that thing tick. And Mixon got all, it was 30 carries. He got all the attempts. He was essentially the bell cow within a really high-octane offense of the He did a lot of first. He fits that gap scheme really well. I just could not love it enough. I'm really happy that one found another home, but also like he paid his price tag, right? From that, if his play continues, that's exactly what they paid him to do, and he's doing it. That was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, Joe Mixon, as a guy who had the Texans -3, Joe Mixon kept me alive for most of the game. I was really happy with JoJo. No gloves. No gloves as a running back. That's a tough move to pull off. You're getting stepped on. He came out, was firing. I really like JoJo's performance in that game. And yeah, the offensive line's improved from last year. Just a year older, a lot of those guys getting more experience. And Mixon behind it finally gives them a runner. He's not Damian Pierce. And what you were saying, he got the whole workload after Cam Akers preseason. They're like, there was a little Cam Akers buzz if he was going to steal a carry or two away. But it's all Joe Mixon. He can do all three passing downs. He's going to return value. He's probably going to comfortably be a top 10 running back this year. And if he keeps at it, he could be a top 5 running back in this league this year in fantasy football. You good puppy. All right, for my second star of the week, a big high man, comes from the Windy City of Buffalo. I'm going with Josh Allen, quarterback of these Buffalo Bills. So we were saying before in our first episode, we were looking at MVP odds, and we're like, if it wasn't Joe Burrow, we're going to roll it. Josh Allen, because Josh Allen lost all his weapons, and if he was going to win some games, he's going to have to put on the Superman cape and do it all himself. So Josh Allen and these Bills, what do? They looked really bad starting out of the gate. They really got hit in the mouth by Kyler. I don't know who saw that come. Some people did, but he responded. He put on that Superman cape, and they were down 15 points. I think they were down 14 points. Josh Allen put the team on his back. He got 4 touchdowns on the day. He got 2 goal line red zone rushing touchdowns. He literally barreled over 2 people. He jumped over a man. I saw it. If Josh Allen keeps on doing this, I wonder what his MVP odds look like now. You might want to go sprinkle something on there, because if he keeps on winning games like this, he's going to get some buzz. He had nothing going in the first half. Didn't really matter. The stat line didn't look totally impressive at the end of the day, but they got a W. It was all because of him. And Greg Rousseau a little bit, 3 sacks.
He looked so impressive, and it was down 17-0. That was such a turnaround. Mm-hmm. And he was definitely the king of the day there.
True. Right.
So my next one, and this is me just doing the victory lap on the call that I made last week to say that Mike McDonald was going to essentially take the Seahawks defense and play around and see how it looked and dial up a bunch of concepts against Bo Nix and see what happens. And turns out, they're really good. The acquisition, I remember seeing this in the offseason, but they got Julian Love to play that safety. And I saw that. I was like, yes, that is the guy that they need to be able to moving around the defense, kind of let him do his own thing, but play it in like a similar fashion to what Kyle Hamilton did. And so that plus good defensive performances on both quarterbacks, they got plenty picks. But the boy Imafe was like, that was the guy. He had like a tremendous showing for his first game out too. Like I was really impressed by that. It was expected, right? But I'm taking my victory lap here and saying that the Seahawks might be a good defense.
No, the Seahawks look good. Julian Love is one of the better games out of all defenders over the weekend. It was a good call by you, Dan. You hit it on the nose. I would have wanted the Seahawks to cover a little bit more, but they made Bo Nix look like a rookie, like a true rookie. So, no, it was a good showing for the Seahawks D. They come to New England. I think they're going to win pretty comfortably as well. New England didn't really see too much of a defense with the Bengals. Mike McDonald's going to bring the Seahawks on their own. I think he's going to bring home the Seahawks' second victory. All right, this is my last high of the week. So it's Monday night. We're all coming home from work. We're all getting ready to watch some football game. And McCaffrey's dead. He died. Now, nobody knew it. I made a graphic. I put it up. A lot of work went into that graphic, Kyle Shanahan. You didn't respect my work. Posted it. Made me look like an idiot. Most action I ever got on a post is because people were telling me I'm stupid. Looks like I'm stupid. Egg on my face. No Christian McCaffrey played. But Jordan Mason did play. And play he did. Play really well he did. Jordan Mason filled in seamlessly for Christian McCaffrey, which is a sentence not many people thought they would be saying at this time this week. Jordan Mason's a good runner. We knew that coming into this. But what he did to the Jets defense, I don't think the Jets defense allowed a runner like that all year last year, which brings questions. Is the Jets run D something that we have to worry about? Or was it just Jordan Mason, that run scheme that Shanahan has, that he can just make anybody look great? I'm leaning towards the Shanahan method, but what Mason did in his first start and just putting the team on his back with Purdy and them just controlling that offense is just kudos to Mason. It's one of those feel-good stories that happen every year in football. Some kid comes out of nowhere, becomes a star overnight, and we all fall in love with him. Mason, you're the man. I love seeing you run, but I do want to see Christian McCaffrey come back pretty soon because he's the best running back in football.
Agreed on all that count. And he was a fourth-round rookie, is that correct?
Jordan. Undrafted out of Georgia Tech. Nobody gave love.
Yep. So him coming in and actually playing that way against, we thought, a very competent defense and showing up was beyond impressive. Kudos. I'm probably leaning more to the fact that it's a Kyle Shanahan running back more than anything else, but the fact that he like presented really well in the system. All right. My last high of the week is the one that I wanted to see because it confirmed my thought process with one of my division winners, and that is the Bucs offense not skipping a beat. We lose that OC going on to Carolina to whatever he did in the offseason. Doesn't look like he did much, but the Bucs O was fantastic. They incorporated McMillan out of the slot. They had both Godwin and Evans had plenty of action. Baker looked controlled and confident through the entire thing. I'm not entirely sure if it's the Washington cornerbacks or like their back end situation, because that could have been a lot. Juice is a particularly good player, and I think they picked on him a lot during the game. But that aside, he looked confident. It looked like a really competent offense. They played really well. They played up to a par that we were hoping to see any sort of divisional winner play to, and they did. And so kudos, Bucks offense and Baker bringing it home.
No, you love seeing Baker just keep on succeeding in Tampa Bay while Manning in Cleveland keeps on doing brownies down his leg, really keeping the team tradition over there. When Liam Cohen went from Kentucky to Tampa Bay, I had my pause. I paused for a few minutes, and I was wondering if Baker would like this. Cohen likes to really chuck the ball deep. He likes to push it. That's something that's really going to jive with Baker well after looking at this game. And Baker, as you were saying, was he picking on the Commanders secondary? That is probably one of the worst in the league, maybe. But Baker made the reads, and he attacked it, and he made the right throws, which is something that we can't say about guys like Joe Burrow, the guy in Cleveland who has brownies down his leg. So kudos to him. Not all the quarterbacks this week were making good plays, reading the defenses and making the throws, because there's only two guys over 300 yards and I want to say maybe five or six over 250 yards. It was a really down week for passing yards, but Baker Mayfield was still the quarterback one on the week in fantasy, and he had a really good week. So kudos to you, Baker. Keep it up. We love seeing you ball.
Amen to that. All right, I'm going to start out with our three lows. We just got three lows.
Nice, Dan.
Yeah. We're going to try to be as nice as possible. We're treating all these individuals as objective analysis. We're not trying to be personal to any of them. But I'll start off with my first big one, the one that kind of I expected this to happen. Like, deep down, I expected this to happen. I just wish it didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? But Caleb Williams came out, and he looked like a rookie. He looked like he wasn't ready for the O-line falling or the D-line overpowering and him having to deal with pressure. He didn't feel comfortable in the pocket. His hero ball mentality whenever he was moving outside was instinctual. It wasn't something where he was going to progress through a breeze. He wasn't going to sit in the pocket and try and get through a read pattern. He was going to be like, yep, I'm gone. And also I'm gone. And then making an off-base throw that's going to not be catchable. He had that continuously. There was some real poor decision-making within there too. There's a number of throws in the second half where I don't even know why you're, but it's a real rookie game. So the enigma that we saw with Shroud coming out and being this like really competent quarterback by the second half, I'm expecting some sort of progression with Caleb. It's very similarly. My worry is that O-line doesn't support that development because a lot of times you want a really good O-line to put a rookie behind because that's how you sustain that rookie's both confidence and performance. And right now that didn't look the same. I mean, like the Titans front four, you know, Simmons, everyone else isn't like a particularly bad unit. Like, if anything, it's average to above average, I would say. But that the secondary isn't anything to run home about. I would expect him to be able to at least make a couple of his throws that were off target. But no, I'm not sure. My tape overview on them, I'm understanding. I'm going to chalk this up as a low, but an understanding.
There you go. Now, are we worried that Roma Dunze is out and Keenan Allen is already injured and it leaves him with DJ Moore? One target after that plethora of targets he has.
DJ Moore also went down for a quote-unquote injury. Like, he bounced right back, but he was definitely out for a couple plays, too. I don't know. I think it's everyone shaking off the rust. I think there are plenty of individuals across the league who had that, oh, we're playing real football, like that realization. I think that happens. I would be remiss to say that if we lost both Allen and Odunze, that his performance would not be as good, period. He probably needs those weapons to go the way he should.
Yeah, I'm not terribly worried. Legarius needs pretty good a corner. He can take a guy away. The Titans are just one of those teams that put a lot of money into a lot of free agents, especially defensively. They have a lot of vets on their team where the Bears are young, but their defense shined through, where the Titans are a little bit younger on the offensive side, especially the quarterback that we'll be getting to. And I'll just hop into it right now because my low of the week was the quarterback on the other side of the ball. And something that Caleb Williams didn't do, which led to a victory, was turn the football over. And Will Levis, you will live in infamy with your hands on top of your head in the I surrender pose as you get executed. And your team loses the football game. Stop eating mayonnaise and start reading defenses. It's not good. Not good at all.
The Mayo. Oh, man. The hilarious thing is his last name is Levis. Like, why didn't he do like a Levi commercial or something? No, he went with Mayo. That was his back. I watched that game pretty intently and he had worse reads. And the problem is that he has a year under his belt. You shouldn't have worse reads than a rookie starting the first time.
Yep. I'm more worried about Will Levis than Caleb because he's turning that football over and he's making dumb mistakes. Can't have that out of my quarterback. And I don't like Will Levis either because he's a cocky son of a gun.
Fair enough. All right, I guess it's right back to me.
That was quick. That was quick, Dan. It was a little pong here. I went right back at you.
It was a quick pass. So I'll get into this in more detail because we're going to do a little bit of a take breakdown next piece. But Kirk Cousins, there's something wrong. It's not, he didn't look like himself. And I'm going to leave it there for right now. I'll get into it. But Kirk, that's a low.
All right. My low for this week, the number one low, My number two low was Will Levis, but I needed to just get in there. My number one low is not letting a man get to work on time when he was clearly late trying to get there in a hurry. Miami-Dade police, I'm looking at you, putting Tyreek out in cuffs because he was going a little fast down Miami where everybody loves speeding. And then the worst part of it all was Walter Payton, man of the year, notably good guys. Calais Campbell's just coming over asking if anybody needed a hand, and you made him feel like he was going to jail too. What are you doing? You're supposed to de-escalate the situation as a police officer, not escalate it, not make the front page news, not get the whole police department in hot water, and you're not supposed to arrest the guy who's going to win you a football game in a couple hours either just because he's going 60 and 45 or whatever it was. Miami-Dade police, clean it up. Clean it up.
No notes. All right. My last one of the lows is, and Daboll's going to get fired.
No,
he's going to get fired. This Daniel Jones, this Danny Dimes is absolutely atrocious. I love listening to Brett Coleman, the Bootleg Football Podcast. He put it so succinctly. You, as a fan, you don't have to be okay with mediocrity. You don't have to accept the fact that teams will continuously put someone who is just atrocious in positions with lots of money behind. And in this case, I completely agree. I think Danny Dimes shouldn't be a starting quarterback. I didn't think he was going to be a starting quarterback when he was originally drafted. He's shown nothing other than the one season when Daboll stepped in as the rookie head coach and actually made something out of it. But I don't think that was just like him. So that game on Sunday against Sam Darnold on the other side and looking at the two of them and being like,
bad,
one of them,
right. Leave him alone. Throw the towel.
Luckily, though, listen, one of them is objectively worse. You're looking at two side by side and you're saying one of them is objectively worse.
But Danny Dimes has a hurt boob. He's coming back from a torn ACL. He needs to run. But Daniel Jones, he can't catch anything.
Oh, Danny. Yeah, no, he's bad. He's bad, Hippo.
No. Oh, Dan. Daniel Jones is not the best quarterback in football. My lowest low of the week was the Miami-Dade police. They're staying low. My second low was Will Levis. My third low should probably be my first low because he's in the news again. It's Deshaun Watson. All right, so we're talking about going into film breakdown in our next segment here. I went into film breakdown with one team, and then I want to take a little peek behind this curtain because there's somebody screaming for help. Not a woman this time, thankfully, but there's this man playing really poor football all over the news. I was like, I want to see how bad is he actually playing? What's going on with Deshaun Watson? We all loved Deshaun Watson when he was at Clemson. He was electric. Things have changed. Time has passed. All right, so I looked into Deshaun Watson tape, and what I saw was a shell of a man. Things have happened in Deshaun Watson's life, and I don't think we're getting him back, Dan. I don't know what happened when he was out of football for those few years, but he picked up a lot of bad habits. When I was watching tape on the rookies, as I do every year, I was watching Penix, I was watching Caleb Williams this year, Drake May, all the rookie quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson on tape has a lot of rookie mistakes in his mechanics, his fundamentals, his reading, and I don't know where he picked it up because he was not like this. When he drops back, his footwork is just very sloppy now. He loves to have his feet bowed out, something that Penix does. And they have similar frames to themselves, not similar games, because Deshaun needs to run the football to be effective where Penix doesn't, because he can throw it a lot better. But on his dropbacks, it's sloppy footwork. I don't know what Stefanski's watching on tape to not correct this, but it's sloppy footwork. And unlike the person who I'm going to be speaking about in my tape review, he is staying locked on to his one read. It's like in Madden when you play Madden with your buddies and you're looking at B before the read. You're not going to go off of B and you're just waiting for B to get open. And then sometimes you're going to take a sack. Well, he was sacked not once, not twice, not three times. He was sacked six times in this ball game. And it's because he's laser focused on his guy and he's waiting for him to get open. And it's also why Amari Cooper only had 15 yards, 16 yards, is because the Cowboys were taking him away and Deshaun Watson was looking at him. And guess what, Deshaun? There, you know, he isn't getting open. You're just getting sacked. I haven't seen Deshaun Watson look this poorly on tape since ever. This is the worst Deshaun Watson that I have seen. I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibilities that this man can come back, because I see the intangibles in him, the athleticism, the action with his arm. There are some plays where he actually runs out of the pocket and I was like, okay, there he is. And he makes a throw, but it was just a little bit off because his mechanics are off. And I don't know how you invest $200+ million guaranteed into this man and be Kevin Stefanski and be this offensive guy and not correct these just simple maneuvering. You want to sidestep, stay on the balls of your feet, look at your first read, go see that it's cover two, go to the second read over the middle of the zone, and you hit your man. These are simple Pop Warner instructions that Stefanski should be giving to Watson, which tells me Watson doesn't respect Stefanski. Stefanski doesn't have a hold of the locker room or Deshaun Watson, and that this is just a problem that's going to be coming up for the rest of the year, and it's a fire sale in Cleveland. The Brownies are pooped this year.
Yeah, there it is.
Amen.
Amen indeed. All right, so that leads us into our spotlight taping. So each one of us took a game. We watched all the games. That's inside the point. But we took each a game to go into and do the like official rewatch tape that we get a little bit deeper. So I'll start off here. I picked, and I alluded to this earlier, I picked the Falcons and the Steelers for a number of reasons. I wanted to really see
field goals.
I wanted to see Chris Boswell kick 5 field goals. Like, yeah, that's
six
really what I wanted.
Six of them, bad boy.
Excuse me. It was 6 field goals. I really wanted to see it. No, I wanted to see what the Falcons offense was going to be. What is this Morris head coaching going to change? Like, where are we stepping into in the new era of what the Atlanta show? And then also I wanted to see, you know, the Arthur Smith revenge, Eric Schultz, billionaire son revenge, I guess.
God,
but also I wanted to see what Arthur Smith is going to do with that offense. When I originally picked this, I did not expect Justin Fields back. So a little bit of my tape view was like very much focused on him and where he is in his progression. And I was really hoping I was going to see Russell Wilson, because I wanted to see what that offense was like through the offseason, what they put together and what the packages they wanted for him. And that wasn't part of it. So basically, as far as like some of the overview points on this Falcons Steelers game, was it was a trench battle. And that was between Falcons O-line and Steelers D-line and then vice versa. But it really came down to those pieces. I want to give Gray Jarrett the game ball, because there were more than once where he showed up on tape. He was stopping the end around. He was containing Fields. He had this ability to step in there and do just a really remarkable job. And I know Gray Jarrett has been given nods over his, you know, very many years in the league, but it looked like he was actually being highlighted within Morris's system. So I really, that appeared on tape. But first off, let's talk about Cousins. So reading and watching Cousins throughout the plays, and I said this also off air, he was grimacing every time he was throwing. He was not comfortable within his read progression. It was very quick and somewhat decisive, but quick throws. And he was essentially trying not to get it. He was in shotgun every single snap. There was a real like stance in what their offensive approach is, was take Cousins and his ability to either scramble or move or do anything else. He looked awkward. He looked uncomfortable with when he took a step, like he was doing his step back progressions. And it really felt like there was something that was inherently off through this. There was a lot of quick hitting zones. Ray McCloud, who was essentially playing the, and I picked this over the offseason, the Moore, who's now injured, but the Addison role within this offense, he was looking to him more than anyone else. And I don't know if that was because there were coverages the Steelers were playing to take Drake London out of the picture. But a lot of the times it was like, okay, was this in-breaking route over the middle? And he was like taking his three-step drop and like just driving the ball at Ray with it first read. So I'm not sure if they were really designing their offensive scheme to play against the Steelers, for that reason and have Ray Ray be a highlight, but he showed up on tape on that offensive side. Bijan is Bijan's Bijan. They were like, yep, go ahead. We're going to take Algier out for only a handful of snaps, but Bijan in particular was going to be a focal point. I was really happy. You have something to say on him? I feel like
I have something to say on Ray Ray McCloud.
Okay. Hit me with the Ray Ray McCloud take.
All right. Mike Tomlin loves Tampa too. He comes from Tampa Bay as the defensive coordinator, Tampa 2 zone. Ray Ray McCloud's a good zone breaker. That's probably why they were targeting him. But Ray Ray's a good zone breaker. So he's one of those guys who can run a lot of routes, that can get behind defenders and stuff like that. So that's why Ray Ray was doing so good. What did you say before then? On Kirk?
No,
I had a question on Kirk.
Yeah. Go ahead.
How many games do they lose in a row before Penix comes in, Dan? Do we see Penix this year?
You know, what I think will happen. This is just a guess here. Just from watching that first tape. They're sitting down and they're watching the tape as of yesterday, right? Is Kirk ready to come back? Like, is he actually ready? Is he physically healthy enough to play the position? Because what they have to do with this like full shotgun approach is they limit their playbook. They have to rely on little movement from the quarterback. And they have to rely on a lot of like outside zone. They have to do quick hitters. There's no deep progression within this. I'm going to say they're going to let him do it another game. They'll probably evaluate. Right. So if they lose, let's say 4 in a row, they're If I see 0-4 or 1-3, yeah, I think Penix gets a nod or at least a step in. Or they may do it like ceremoniously. You'd be like, oh, Kirk like planted his foot wrong. Doesn't
phantom
feel good.
Injury
now
time.
We gotta let him go in. Exactly. There may be like, I'm not predicting it, but that's a possibility. Okay.
Plus
and
10,000 Michael Penix rookie of the year. Go on, Dan.
That's an amazing bet. I can't wait. The other things for the Steelers, I'll just do the Steelers defense before the Steelers though. TJ Watt is a menace. But a lot of the disruption that he had was on plays that they didn't assign a double team or a chip block or something. Like whenever he was chipped or double teamed, he was held in check. And when the plays that he was like essentially allowed to run past the tackle and even into a running back or something, you have to treat TJ Watt like you would a all-star. You have to put as much firepower to defend him as well. Everything else looked fine as far as that. I know, like, he got the turnover, but that was because it was a broken play and the tight end got hit by the shotgun pass, which is, again, shotgun pass, right? I don't know. That's what I'm saying. But I'll touch on Fields a little bit in incorporating Pickens as well. I think Pickens, out of all the receivers who played yesterday, Pickens looked the part. That guy has some amazing catches, like down the sideline. That it was reversed because of a hold, but he had an amazing catch down the sideline. Hands on multiple plays were really impressive. If you look at the throwing chart for Fields, it's hilarious because he didn't throw to the middle of the field whatsoever. He only threw this out route, like hitting like a deep, but like a post or like a set.
That's the Russell Wilson offense for you. Allergic to the middle of the field, breaks out in highs. Get the EpiPen out.
It was bad. But for like all of that concerned, so Fields, where again, I don't think Fields was expected to play this game. So he didn't look great. I think him and Daniel Jones have very similar mentalities. The problem is that Fields still is healthy enough to do the, I'm just going to scramble. I don't see my first read. I'm just going to scramble. But he also played similar to Jane Daniels, where he had just like no wherewithal for his health when he was running the ball. Just like, yep. I'm going to go plow into this linebacker. Like, it's just whatever. And I think that's a way to play sustainable ball, especially as a quarterback. And if he had a decent amount of time, that pocket wasn't like collapsing on every play, but he was still doing this very weird, look at my first read, didn't see it, tuck and run. No. That was like his cadence throughout.
That'll make you play running back. My game of the week. Me and Dan, we ask each other. We got to pick out one game of the week, that one thing over the week that turned heads that made people go, what the hell happened there? And I think there was no better game than the one that happened in Cincinnati when the New England Patriots came to town and the Bengalis were skinned their orange pelts in their all orange uniforms, which was a terrible fashion mistake and also a disgrace to Cincinnati Chili because they just poo-pooed all over their uniforms, it looked like. The Cincinnati Bengals played poor, very poor. And I was going into the film, and I was looking at Joe Burrow, and I was like, okay, what happened to my man Joe Burrow? I picked you for MVP. You're not MVP after this performance. And is this something I should worry about? So I pull up the tape. First play of the game, Zach Moss ran to the wrong hole. Second play of the game, right tackle gap. Swim City, Utah, here I come. Joe Burrow's on the ground, ball's on the ground. It looked like his wrist was a little something. People are making speculations about the wrist. I'm not. It didn't look like it affected them for the rest of the game, but I'll get into that later. And then third play of the game, Joe Burrow might have been seeing some ghost. He made the check down read instead of the out. It was a 3-and-out. This proceeded to happen for 3 drives in a row. 3 3-and-outs. You can't have that if you're trying to win a football game. On the fourth drive, they finally get into the red zone. They go all the way down. It was about a 15-play drive. Those need to end in some points. Guess what it ended in, Dan?
No points.
No points. A turnover because Tanner Hudson wanted to reach out for the end zone instead of getting the ball down the 1 yard line. It was poked out by, what's the safety's name? Duggar. Kyle Duggar. Great play to have the awareness, poke the ball out, but it's killed Cincinnati. All right. We go into halftime with no points, down double digits. Seems like it's time to get Jamar Chase involved. Should be that time. Jamar Chase was not involved until the second to last drive on a pass of more than 15 yards, Dan. So I looked back at the tape, went through all the plays. They're getting Jamar involved with motions and into the flats, isolations on the outside with comebackers, and no deep balls. Jamar Chase loves some deep balls. You should probably throw Jamar Chase some deep balls. They didn't throw anything deep ball game until basically crunch time on their drives. And at the end of the second half, they had that long one to Gesicki. It wasn't terribly long. It was maybe 15, 20 yards in the end zone that it was caught and then dropped. And then the next play, they had the crosser over the middle of the zone to Tanner Hudson where he wanted to reach out and have a little celebration of Mardi Gras. And it was punched out for a turnover. So outside of that, he only had two other throws that traveled over 15 yards. So I started worried about the wrist, but it wasn't the wrist because he was too accurate on all his other throws. And there's something that I was saying with Deshaun, how he was sticking on his one read. This is something that I wanted Joe to do more. He had Jamar very open on a lot, but he was just going through his, he was reading the defense first and seeing what they were allowing. And then trying to pinpoint the lesser throws instead of looking at Jamar first, where I think you still look at Jamar Chase first every play, and he would have been open on some more chunk yardage plays. So what Joe Burrow was doing was overanalyzing some plays and then finding out that he had to just take the check down on a lot of those throws, which I think really hampered him. T. Higgins was out. Maybe this affected them because it had to switch up some route running by some of the secondary receivers. But I think the biggest thing that happened to them on the day is they abandoned the run game after two drives. They ran the ball, I want to say, 4 or 5 times in the first half. That's, you have to run the football. Zach Moss had a better game in the second half where he actually hit the right hole. But after the first drive, they came in and brought in Chase Brown, who didn't really do anything of note either. So they switched them back and forth. I'm not calling for Zach Moss to lose his job, but they have to run the football if they want to win some games, and they have to trust Zach Moss to actually hit the hole. That's something that you just go to the sideline and be like, hey, the hole, you jump to the wrong hole. It's like a soccer goalie when it's a penalty kick. It happens so fast. It's bang, bang when you're on the football field and the speed of the game. It's just so fast that sometimes you jump right instead of jumping left and you're just in a pitfall. So I'm not totally blaming Zach Moss. I'm not trying to call for the poor man's job because it shouldn't be called for. He's still a good, reliable running back. Nothing special, but he's a good, reliable runner. So my overall preference with the Bengals is they're dealing with some injuries with T. Jamar not being their Foley. I didn't think this was a Jamar problem. I think Joe needs to just chuck the ball up to Jamar, because by the end of the game, you could see the body language. He was getting frustrated. Throw the ball to Jamar Chase and run the football, the Bengals, and you shall be set free. I'm not worried about the Bengals. Early season rust. That's it.
Perfect. Perfect.
No notes. On to the next.
Okay. And then our second last set here is going to be just a quick within our tape watching that piqued our interest. It was something that, like, our ears pop and that we wanted to just, you know, talk about. So these are under the radar players of interest, something that we want to touch on and go in overview. So my one felt like he was thrust into the limelight very quickly. And it's funny, we actually were picked the same game, just opposite sides here. So right. My one was Tyler Johnson, the wide receiver for the Rams, who had to step up in an unexpected way when Puka went down. And I was watching with you, and I texted you immediately. I was like, this guy looks like there's something there. Like, yeah. I saw him running out of the and he had an inbreaker across the middle of the field, caught it, and he had this, like, two-step, made the safety miss. Or not the safety, made the quarterback miss. And there was, like, oh, he's got a little bit of fluidity. He has this little bit of movement there. I think I saw that somewhere. It may have been on the same team with a very similar player. And so I think him potentially stepping into that role full time going forward until Puka returns, I think that's something that I want to keep an eye on. That's something of interest.
Get your glasses out, Dan. Puka's not coming back.
Oh, I don't know about that. I can't make that call. I hope he does. I'm
making this call. This is a lost season for Puka Nacua. He sprained his PCL and he's had knee troubles in the past. This is something that can reoccur. He clearly came back too fast from a bursa sack and it led to this, because the route he was running when he got hurt wasn't that big of a route. It was, I think it was a little inside slant maybe. So I'm definitely worried about Puka, but Tyler Johnson stepped right in nicely. And what you need to do when you're a Los Angeles Rams running back in McVay's offense, you got to block. Got to be a blocking receiver, and block he did, Dan. He was a great blocker on the outside. He had a crackdown block early in one of those drives, but the best block he had all night was on Kyren's touchdown by the goal line. He really sealed the outside backer and got Kyren that hole there. So I love Tyler Johnson ever since he came out of Minnesota. I think he had the highest catch rate in college football history when he was coming out. He went to Tampa Bay. Tom Brady doesn't like rookies that he can't trust, so he didn't really fit in well there. He just fell out of favor, but I'm happy that he's caught on with the Rams here. And I'm thinking he's going to get utilized pretty well. I'm with you. Him and DeMarcus should probably both be good, because they're both good receivers. And you like DeMarcus Robinson as well. But yeah, I like Tyler Johnson just because I think he's a better blocker than Robinson.
Okay.
All right. My under the radar player. I was thinking, I was going back and forth. I just want to shout out J.K. Dobbins because I've liked him for a long time out of Ohio State. I don't like a lot of Buckeyes unless you're really good, but I like J.K. Dobbins. He's been plagued by injuries the past few years and his career since came out of college. But just seeing him have a really good game and bust some big runs was, it made me happy. And I'm hoping Harbaugh treats him well in that running game with Greg Roman, leads him to have a career year and he just stays healthy. But it's enough on JK. My under the radar player, which is a player we talked about, and we were like, we need to see it before we believe it. I saw something on Sunday night. It's Jameson Williams. Jameson Williams finally looked like he did at Alabama. And that's scary for an offense that was already firing with the run game. Best offensive line in football, arguably. You got two running backs that are coming out of there that complement each other really well. You have probably the best possession receiver in football, and Amon-Ra, who's a tough son of a gun, who will go over the middle, will catch anything. You got Laporte at tight end. And now you got a guy who runs a 4.3 40 who can go down, run in that seam. He can go over the middle, run those crossers, and just beat coverage flat out. Jameson Williams can run jet sweeps. Jameson Williams is a scary guy when you draw plays for him. And guess what? He has Ben Johnson drawing up plays for him. And that offense just week by week might look like a complete deal if they just all stay healthy, which, I mean, hopefully, we're hoping Gibby's the only one with the hammy that could crop up. So if they stay healthy, Jameson Williams is just, he can take anything to the house. He gives them that X factor of that boom bust play on any play with the rest of it. It's like, how are you going to cover that? How can you cover that five-headed monster? And he's an upgrade over the guy who went to Denver, who dropped the ball and lost them all those games.
Khalif Raymond?
Khalif Raymond. Sorry, Khalif Raymond. Josh Reynolds. He's better than Josh Reynolds. So yeah, when you upgrade like that on an offense that was already great, this is a special offense. I'm getting nervous. That NFC North could run through the lines now that Jordan Love's out. So
Jameson did pop on tape, and the only reason he's on that team was because he was the first round. He has draft capital attached to him. But I'll eat my words. Like, he looked really good. And the fact that he could be fully healthy back in that offense, he may be like the prime time portion of that offense, the Tyreek Hill to the original Patrick's offense. That's my thought process.
That's right. Scary X factor now.
Yep. Every team needs one. So I'm glad the Lions have it. And I want to root for Dan Campbell and his team more than anyone. So if they're doing it, that's great. All right. Then we'll go in a quick preview. So Hippo, you said it earlier off air. Go ahead. Give me your take here.
On Thursday night, Buffalo Bills will be going into Miami and the police will be arresting them all before the game. No, they won't, because they're all fired. They're all fired. There you go. No police officers in these streets. Armageddon. No, the Buffalo Bills will be going into Miami. And my lock of the week, Dan, are the Miami Dolphins -3. And here's why. So, Buffalo, they had a home game last week. They let Arizona come in, and Arizona punched them in the mouth. Well, guess what? Now you have to fly down to Miami in that heat in prime time on a short week where Josh Allen just broke his left hand, but nobody wants to talk about it. And your defense can't cover lick, and Mike McDaniel's here. He's sleeping in his bed. Tyreek Hill and the whole team's a little fired up because of the incident I've been talking about. Got a little bit of camaraderie, especially when you win a game that you shouldn't have won because of some luck, some football luck, as we like to call it. And after you have some football luck, you usually go on a streak or two. And the Dolphins love playing football in September, especially if you're playing football in Miami. I'm looking at the Buffalo defense. We talked about Alano being injured and how that's a problem. The cornerbacks for the Buffalo Bills had a problem covering some Cardinals guys. So when we bring Tyreek and Jalen, who both had over 100 yards last game, to town, and then you bring a rushing attack, that Shanahan rushing attack that can put anybody in, I'm thinking the line's as low as it is because Achan and Mostert are probably out for the game. But guess what? They have Jalen Wright and Jeff Wilson just to plug in. Those are two capable backs that can run the ball just as well as the two guys above them. Jalen Wright, I don't know if he can do the receiving work that Achan was doing in week one, but it's still something that I think it's going to... The offense for Miami is better than the Arizona offense, even though I like Kyler and the Cardinals. And then defensively, Jordan Poyer left town, and he left town on a bad note from Buffalo. And I don't know if you're going to be able to pass on that secondary Buffalo. Who's Jalen Ramsey going to cover? Because anybody he wants to cover, he's going to shut down. And if he's trying to get a deep shot, Jordan Poyer might knock them out. So that secondary for Miami is really good. And Buffalo doesn't have any really good receivers right now. It doesn't really mesh well. So here's how Buffalo wins the game. They have to run the football. They have to run the football really well. And James Cook, it could be that. Josh Allen, Ray Davis, they have the pieces to do it. Now, let's see them try and execute it for a whole game. That'll be a little bit different. So if they do run the football, they can stay in it. But I think the firepower for Miami is too strong here. I'm taking the -3 in Miami, where they want revenge from last year, where Miami was knocked out the division and had to go on the road to Kansas City because they lost the last game of the season to the Bills at home. Dan, your pick.
I said before, and this is more of a gut feeling rather than me having a analysis here. But it's hard for me to bet against Josh Allen in his performance last week with the receivers against at least a competent defensive. I can't bet against them. If it's such a three line, that's so hard to pick anyway. I'm probably going to take the Bills on this game and not bet against what I think is superior talent, the superhero Josh Allen play. But I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not very steadfast on my take right now. You have more logic behind it than I do. Yes.
The better quarterback is a big factor. So anything can happen.
Anything indeed. Okay. And I think that will do it for us from Objectively Good Takes. I'm Dan at FF Rich Kid on Twitter. And this is Hippo. Hippo underscore ball.
That's right. HIPPO underscore BALL.
And thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you on Saturday.
Peace out. Thank you.